The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Ollie Mann, and before we get on with this week's show, I just wanted to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For more information on building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now on with the show. This week, gamblers, newlyweds, and Elvis tribute acts are joined in Vegas by the biggest gathering of tech companies on the planet. 3,200 of them. They're all there for the 49th Consumer Electronics Show, CES, with everything from robots to hoverboards to smart bras. Yes, I really did say that. Vying for the attention of the 170,000 delegates who flock there from all over the world. The Guardian tech team is there, of course, amongst the flock, reporting on what gadgets we'll be getting in our stockings next Christmas and probably for the next few Christmases after that. So stay tuned, in Ultra HD, preferably, on a flexible screen. This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian. So, on the line from Las Vegas, we have Jemima Kish, late of this parish, and now head of technology at The Guardian in the US, and her Guardian comrade-in-arms, Nellie Bowles. Plus with me here in the studio in London, Jonathan Haynes and Samuel Gibbs from the UK tech team. So, Jemima, let's get this out of the way, first of all. What is CES for the uninitiated?
So, CES is this vast event for the industry where everyone kind of comes together and you get this contrast of, I suppose you can see the techies sort of really in their own element and really, really enjoying being with each other. And so they enjoy the sort of shared consensus of all geeking out on all this stuff. But at the same time, I think what they're all looking for is something special, like a kind of glimmer of something exciting, a kind of vision of what the future might look like. So there's this weird kind of contrast when you're here. We did have an interesting discussion with an author called Stephen Johnson, who's written books about innovation and the unintended consequences of technology. And this is a really interesting thing to muse on, because I think a lot of the products will end up being used in a different form to the form they're in now. And none of us can really predict what that will look like. So we just have to work with a kind of mindset of openness and open-mindedness and sort of experimentation, so that we can achieve the best out of technology and not be sort of intimidated by it.
For me, and this is Nellie, what CES is if the tech industry is America's most interesting and important industry right now, CES is its most important yearly gathering and showcase. And it's like all the whiz-bang gadgets and all the sort of silliness, but it's also a really serious conference for a lot of people. And, you know, you've got the heads of almost every media company here. You've got like the head of the Wall Street Journal, Nick Denton from Gawker and Shane Smith from Vice, all sort of trolling around looking for what's going to be interesting and what's going to be new and what the stories are for this year.
And what are the big success stories in the past? Because it's got a pedigree, hasn't it? Because it's got a heritage. This was the place, I think, where they launched VHS, wasn't it? It was the place they launched Blu-ray.
Yeah, I mean, it's been important in the industry for almost 50 years, which nothing really lasts that long in the tech world. So that in and of itself is sort of interesting. And it's still every year is a place where people make huge announcements. So like this year, the big trend was all around cars. And cars were hugely sort of captivating to attendees and to the media outside. But you had Ford announcing they're going to launch an autonomous program. You have VW making their sort of first U.S. statement after testifying to Congress. It's really become a car and tech show this year, and I think that that's going to be something that continues on into the future.
Okay, well, more on cars and vehicles in a moment. Samuel, you've been following CES from the London Tech Desk. What are the stories that have caught your eye this year, perhaps from the slightly more unusual side?
I have to say, my favorite thing this year has been the Spheros Force Band. So for anybody who doesn't know, Sphero makes small robotic balls, of which this year's stellar edition is BB-8 from Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, we all knew we wanted one before we knew what the character was.
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest, for all intents and purposes, Force Awakens is just a story about a little robot rolling around being bothered by all these humans. What's that all about? Anyway, Force Band, you stick this thing on, it's a wristband, and you can control BB-8 with gestures. It's like you have the Force. except you don't.
And when you do go to CES, there's a lot of events, aren't there, that are laid on for journalists so that essentially, even before the conference proper begins, all of the tech team can start writing these stories about what they think are going to be the big products before they've had a chance to actually look around and see everything. And sometimes, you can even feel this as a reader, the tech journalists are kind of spoon-fed some slightly irresistible novelty products that never, ever make it onto the shelves. I remember the smart toothbrush was the thing a few years ago.
Yeah, that's true. Basically, anyone with any sort of crazy idea turns up, and the crazy ideas are the most interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time, it's just the same old thing, just slightly better than last year. So the crazy stuff is like, wow, look at that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, hoverboards this year, you know, they were all exploding at Christmas, but they were shown off last year at CES. That was the thing, except they were £1,000. You know,
so,
nobody's going to buy one.
So we could find out this year what is going to be the thing that will be exploding in our children's stockings next year. Jonathan, what's caught your eye from this year's coverage?
So one of the things that we've seen this year is the return of retro tech, with Technics' turntable and Sony doing the same sort of thing. And Sony with new Walkman products as well. And it's interesting to see those kind of old brands and those old things that we love so much still are at the cutting edge of technology.
Now, you're bravely continuing with this conversation despite the fact it's 8:30 in the morning over there, and I know that people do stay out quite late at CES. What parties have you been to, Jemima? Can tech geeks party hard?
I've been to a really crazy party in my bedroom with a box of Pepperidge Farm cookies. I think I made it through about 7 of the cookies while I was editing a piece and then went to sleep at 1. That was the craziest party I went to. I've had 2 nights of that. So that's my CES. Nelly, can you do better?
Okay, normally I wouldn't be able to do better than that. But in this case of CES, a lot of people come to this conference, and I didn't even realize this until this year, but a lot of people come to this conference just for the parties. So they don't even get a press badge or a badge to attend or anything. They just come for the after parties. And most of them are hosted by this company called MediaLink, run by Michael Kassin, who sort of negotiates the nightlife. And yeah, I went to a party last night. Michael Kassin hosted this thing at SLS, one of the newer casinos. That's sort of the trendy, hot new one, and had Lady Gaga there, which was insane. So it was like 300 people watching Lady Gaga.
Yeah, it is bizarre, isn't it, how they sign up celebrities. I remember 50 Cent was there the year I was there, and Justin Bieber. I once had to be begged to be let into a karaoke bar at Planet Hollywood, hosted by Lenovo, which was a low point in my life. Samuel, have you been to any big CES parties?
I've been to a few in my time. The funny thing is, like, you're right, it's absolutely packed full of geeks. What it's worth noting is that CES is, like, I suppose only about a quarter press. The rest of it are technology buyers from all sorts of retailers everywhere, and they party hard. And the thing is, you go to these things and, like, attractive, completely out of your league women are busting. They are literally busting and paid for by the technology companies. It is disgusting.
It is booth babes, they're called, aren't they?
No. We've gone way beyond booth babes.
Have we?
Booth babes.
I'm not sure we have on this podcast.
Have semi disappeared. I only saw 3 last year, which was pretty good. Now they've just been transferred directly to the clubs. You can actually stand outside them and watch them getting busted. Literally busted. Like hundreds.
What does busted mean? I'm sorry, I'm your new like American correspondent. Is that a British term?
Bust in, as in transported in, as in put on some moving transport and brought to the location.
As in a bus full of people.
I thought you said busted. I was like, I don't know what that's slang for. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, let's get back on the tech bus. We'll talk about what everyone is talking about at CES next.
If you've got a mobile business, you need an easy way to take multiple payment types with one integration. With Braintree, you can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, credit and debit cards, and more. Braintree also has quick, knowledgeable developer support, so there's help whenever you need it. The Braintree V.0 SDK. One snippet of code and you're all set up and ready to start taking payments from customers around the world. To find out more and for your first £30,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/techweekly.
So, in January every year, visitors to CES in Las Vegas get a glimpse of what the future won't look like unless you live in an absolutely massive conference centre. But amid all the products that we definitely won't be using in the future are, of course, some that genuinely do change our lives. So, what is actually looking genuinely promising this year. Let's kick off with transport, autonomous cars, passenger drones, segways that turn into robot butlers. The passenger drone, that seemed to take a lot of people by surprise. We know that there are more drones at CES than ever before. I think there are 33 drone companies this year compared to 4 last year. But the idea of a drone you can actually jump into, was anyone predicting that? Did anyone know that was coming?
I mean, a couple of years ago, we'd have said it was an individual person helicopter, but now drones are the thing. It's like, it's a drone, but it takes a person. Wow, it's a new drone. Yeah. It's a helicopter. I mean, it's very cool.
It is quite interesting because the problem with drones is the power to weight ratio. Like, I mean, to get these things into the air requires quite a lot of energy. And so you try and make them as light as possible. That's why most of the drones we know today barely fly more than 10 minutes on a per battery. And then you stick a 100-kilogram person in it. I'm actually surprised it flies. I mean, it flies for up to 23 minutes at 60 miles per hour.
Autonomous cars, again, another watchword of this year's Consumer Electronics Show. Samuel, Google said it expects to see 10 million autonomous vehicles on the road by 2020. Do you think that's over-optimistic?
Good luck, is what I say. It depends what you mean by autonomous vehicles, right? Most of the cars we've got on the road today are capable of doing some sort of self-driving. I mean, the kind of like lane guidance and what you call it, cruise control, is effectively the sensor systems for autonomous driving. And Volvo, for instance, has got vehicles that can do it. Tesla's famously got the autopilot, but actually get something where you don't have to have a steering wheel, don't have to have a man in control or person in control of your car. I think that's going to be massive regulatory hurdles. We still haven't figured out who pays if something gets hit, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's ambitious. But it's interesting because CES has shown this year particularly, I mean, I remember 3 years ago, car companies only just turned up. I mean, I remember the BMW i3 being there 1 year, but I mean, it wasn't a big stink. They were just kind of there and not really, meh. I mean, this year, they're out in force, and it's no wonder, really. They're in a much better position to create an actual car. Like, they have all the patents. Toyota has more patents than anyone else. If they're going to do it, they're more likely to do it than a tech company. Now, tech companies are all about iterating fast. The problem with the car companies have is that it takes years to produce a car. And so I think it's going to be interesting. I reckon companies like Ford are the dark horse in this. People are all expecting Google to produce, or in fact Apple is the rumour, but I don't think that's even going to happen.
No, it seems their only interest basically is giving us a dashboard-controlled podcast app, effectively, isn't it? It's not exactly a vehicle.
Well, it's what they know, and they should kind of stick to what they know, is what I feel.
Well, talking about Ford, Nelly, I know you've been shadowing the CEO of Ford out there. What did you learn?
Yeah, so the CEO of Ford has been coming out here since 2007, when like basically none of the auto CEOs were coming, so he's into it. But I just learned that there's sort of a huge movement of Detroit moving out to Silicon Valley and moving into these tech conferences. And the convergence between the auto show and the tech conference has, like, definitely happened this year. So they have sort of a parallel. They have their own dinners, and they have a techie car alley. And they all really believe that autonomous vehicles are happening very soon. Probably the most interesting quirky thing I could find was the Faraday rumors. So Faraday is this strange startup that unveiled itself in a sort of very much hyped announcement of an electric autonomous car that looks like a race car. And everyone, all the auto people here are a little bit shaken up by it. Like, they don't quite know what to make of the Faraday. And the rumor among them is all that it's an Apple front. So companies like Apple and Tesla and Google have obviously all been trying to sort of start up cars. And people think that Apple, because Apple's very secretive and won't want to share too much of news about what they're doing, is creating this front company called Faraday. And Faraday, so basically they're keeping a secret in plain sight. And so that's a theory among the auto execs.
Yeah, I don't think there's any weight in that at all. I just don't think it's Apple's style. I think it looks like the Batmobile. It looks like a joke car. And I think, unfortunately, in motoring, there are so many sort of flatulent middle-aged men with too much money and very big egos. And you only have to look at Formula One for that, don't you? I think it's just a guy with more money than sense, and I don't think it's Apple style, but a good rumor anyway.
It's a good parlor trick out here. It's a good sort of, everyone's joking about it.
Let's talk about Segway, because Jonathan, you were very excited about this. You could barely contain your fluids when you came in today, about the new Ninebot, which turns into a cute robot that then follows you around, carrying the shopping, taking pictures of you. Will this make Segway any less ridiculous?
Well, I mean, that's an easy enough task, because I mean, Segways are only really ridden by tour groups in foreign countries who are trying to stay on them, and occasionally like mall cops who like are too big to walk to the other end of the mall. This, however, is a sort of knee-high kind of Segway type thing, which you'll be able to get on and use it to go to work, and then you'll be able to get off it and get it to follow you around and be helpful. So it can have arms that attach to it, and it can. Well, actually, basically, the most important thing about it is it's got a screen on it which has these circular eyes, which are very, very cute for a robot. And I think that the Ninebot Segway could be sort of the grown-up BB-8. It's got all of that personality to it, as well as being a transportation device. So, super.
Does it have a device in it that stops you going off a cliff?
like the owner of Segway did.
No, not as far as I know. The interesting thing I thought about it was it's actually a robotics platform. It's, to us, it's a very cute robot that you can grip between your thighs and ride to work. But
that never happened in the Jetsons, did it?
for Intel and for Ninebot, which is a Chinese robotics startup invested in by Xiaomi, a rising star in the smartphone industry, it is the starting level for a new kind of robotics system. And that's why you can add arms, you can add other things, and developers will be able to get their hands on it in the second half of this year. And then the commercial version is going to come along later. I really can't wait to see what they get up with this. I mean, it does look a bit sad, though. Have you noticed? Two eyes, and then there's a gap below the screen with a kind of like, almost like a frowny face.
You say sad, I say adorable.
Oh, true. Can we just talk briefly about how it works? Does it follow you through, what, Bluetooth in your pocket or what?
No, it's more than that. It uses Intel's RealSense system, so it can recognize you, it can recognize objects, it can recognize your voice, it has depth sensing, it has all sorts of kind of like peripheral sensors, including your average camera, which is what they demoed. It's kind of like the ultimate selfie, isn't it? Kind of the robot coming up and you go, take a picture of me. Bing. Oh, great, thanks. It's really quite advanced.
Will it be able to cross the road?
Well,
I'm just thinking, I'm going for a shop, you know, walking down the high street. What does it do when I want to cross the road? Does it just walk straight in front of a car?
It waits behind you. And then you go, wait, like a dog.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it crosses the road with you, because at that point you're standing on it.
Yeah.
Oh, I see, yeah. I don't think it's going to catch on in this country as a shopping basket unless it's bedecked in tartan. It seems to be my experience. But, you know, who knows? Let's talk about virtual reality, because, I mean, we're all kind of bored of it, really. But that's because we talk about this for a living, and people listening to this are very excited that this is the year they might be able to put Oculus Rift on their face. So you've been promising me, Nelly, a virtual reality brothel drama. Explain.
I should never promise these things. There is virtual reality brothel drama. There's sort of a legal brothel near CES in Pahrump, and they have dubbed themselves the official brothel of CES. Their attendance goes up like 70% during the week of the conference, and they put out a press release, and then I called up the woman who heads it, and they're very upset about VR. They're worried. So they actually like keep up with tech trends pretty well, and they have like a webcam out there when that got trendy, and they do some of the tech stuff, but VR they're super concerned about. So I called them up. And it's mainly they're worried about how good it's getting and how it could get in the way of people having physical contact with each other in a brothel setting, how they see their work is more like it's like support, it's like sex and tenderness, and so they're very concerned about people with a headset on and just, I don't know, becoming automatons alone in our bedrooms.
I think we should, well, maybe not us, but I think they should feel reassured that I think VR is a very, very long way, and even teledildonics to some extent, from being able to replace human intimacy.
Do you really think it's a long way, Jemima? Because, you know, the companies that work in that field will tell you they're you know, just a Kickstarter campaign away from being able to connect you to your partner on the other side of the world.
But there are other factors going on with legal brothels, and one of those is, I think, the thrill for the men that go. So there's a complicated psychology behind that, I think, leaving the technology aside for a minute.
And talking about virtual reality generally, we've got a price now for Oculus Rift, haven't we, in the USA? And it's cheaper than you might think. It was about, was it $800 or something?
It's $599.
Yeah, but you need a $1,000 special computer to use them.
Palmer Luckey defended the price by saying that he wanted to go for quality. And I think he's right. You know, this is a specialist, a very specialist niche product at this point. And I think if you really want to kind of support the industry and you want to be one of the consumers that's one of the first wave, then you've got to pay your price.
I genuinely was surprised it was that cheap. What did you think, Samuel?
The problem with Oculus Rift is that people only see it as a PC accessory. And for a PC accessory, £500 is a lot of money. And they've got an initial base already installed. They've got a load of people with developer kits. They are all going to be given the consumer version of it, so they've already got a kind of baseline. But the problem is, as they said, you've got to have a powerful PC to run it, of which apparently only less than 1% of the world's PCs are capable of doing it. And they've got Sony, who's going to release their own PlayStation VR headset, probably at a lower price. And Valve and HTC with the Vive, they're going to also probably undercut it. It's going to be interesting to see. Palmer Luckey also said that it's going to live a smartphone life cycle. So how long does a smartphone live? Probably 2-3 years,
okay,
maybe?
Okay, yeah, that does put some perspective on it, doesn't it? Although, you know, the Lawnmower Man came out when I was 13. If you'd have told me when I saw that then that I could get in the future that in my house effectively for the same price as what was then half a camcorder, I'd have been pretty impressed. But we've all become more used to this kind of thing. Coming up next, health tech, smart homes and more. Robot butlers, really. That's after this.
Squarespace. This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you have many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design, so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Welcome back. So health was on the agenda this week at CES as well. Nelly, apparently sitting down is killing us.
Yes, of course. Sitting down is killing you. The computer revolution is terrible for us. So many of the apps and things that have gotten really popular in the last couple of years, like Munchery, like Uber, all of these things where you just press a button and something comes to your door. In the case of Munchery, you don't have to walk to a lunch spot 3 blocks away. Or in the case of Uber, you don't have to walk to the bus 2 blocks away. So a lot of people are sort of sounding the alarms about how this is not good. And the trend in Silicon Valley over the last couple years, really, it's not that new, but is, I'd say the last 2 years, is this idea of treadmill desks. And so it's a treadmill that you stand on and you work while you're walking, very slow walk. And the thing that's interesting is that what happens in terms of wacky health tech in Silicon Valley often ricochets out to the rest of the world. So like with the open plan office spaces, that happened first in tech companies. And then now open plan is sort of the way it's done in cities across the world. So treadmill desks might start ricocheting out too. I don't know. I can't quite tell, but it seems like it. They've apparently already outfitted Google and Motorola and the White House and all of that with these devices.
Well, I'm prepared to say that I know, and I think they're not going to take off because they're ridiculous. But Jemima, what do you think?
I just want to know if Obama uses one. Can we get that picture? That would be good.
I stood on one for a minute during the presentation, and I got, you know, I was super tired. I almost fell off when I was trying to get my coffee. Someone wanted to take a picture of me. There's still like a lot of social stigma around the treadmill desk.
Well, that's the interesting thing, because as ever, the technology in itself isn't enough. There's the kind of cultural component and the adoption. And if people feel too silly, and at work people are particularly sensitive about that kind of thing, there's a very big gap to bridge there, I think.
I think that's right. Although standing desks is something that I've totally got behind, pardon the pun, in the last year. I have one at home now and I love it. But that, I don't know, that doesn't seem so crazy, you know, moving between sitting and standing, sort of jogging on the spot whilst you're trying to work.
It's several tiers down on the silliness factor, though, a standing desk, I think.
I think that's right. I mean, it's only a matter of time before someone puts a potty in one of these things, isn't it?
What did you say? It puts a glass of bolly in your hand. What?
Now, that would be great. No, I said it's only a matter of time before someone puts a potty in one of these things. Let's talk about robot butlers again, because Mark Zuckerberg has announced he wanted a robot butler like the one in the Iron Man films. Are we seeing anything that could satisfy his needs, Samuel? The closest I've spotted is a lot of smart fridges going on.
The answer is no. And I'd be amazed if Zuckerberg is able to pull it off. Basically, he wants Jarvis, you're right. And if anybody's ever watched the Iron Man films, Jarvis is in everything, of everything, and can do anything. That's a very big ask, especially if he's going to code it himself.
Got to dream big, though.
Yeah, you do. And there are projects working on this kind of thing, and there are robots in the home that can do certain things, you know, but they're not particularly well developed. And you're right, the Internet of Fridge is probably the closest thing we've got to a robot butler at the moment.
Internet of Fridge. It's like an acronym no one's going to use.
Yeah, sell ordering stuff for you so you don't have to when it runs out. I mean, it's not a new thing. People have been trying to hock internet fridges for the best part of five, 7 years. Yeah, you're right. And nobody's bought into them because they're too expensive.
Now, the technology is changing, though, in that respect, isn't it? I mean, Jemima, this again, going back to your ridiculousness scale, I no longer think it would be so ridiculous. I wouldn't buy a fridge for this reason. But if my new fridge came with a camera inside that I could look at on my phone when I was in the supermarket just to see what was in my fridge, if the camera is so cheap that it just comes like that, is that so ridiculous?
Well, often I think we're a bit sceptical of these technologies, or we think they're silly when they come out. But the best technologies we've seen have that sort of history behind them. And it's hard to predict quite how these tools will be changed and tweaked and turned into some more usable, less novel form. So I find just with basic sort of food ordering and recipes, I haven't found quite the right service to mix everything. So I'd like to have an app that would offer me a suggested meal plan, or I could choose recipes for the week, and then I could just click and order the food and it would come to make those specific recipes. There are sort of combinations of that out there, but not yet. And if those worked with your fridge, then we'd be starting to get somewhere. There are fridges that have kind of scales attached to the shelves, so they can work out how much of each thing there is left. And some of these smart fridges do that, so they scan the food as it goes in and out, so they can see what state the inventory is in, I suppose. But it's not really that compelling. It's all a bit fussy. Until they can really do the heavy lifting for you, metaphorically speaking, I don't think we're there.
Okay, well, let's check back next year and see if any of us are any more willing to have a camera inside our fridge. I seriously, if Hot Point are listening, I'd be interested in trying that out. Well, that's almost it for this week, but I suppose you've still got a few days left of you in the desert, haven't you? Jemima, what's in your diary that you're looking forward to at CES?
Well, CES used to be about these huge technology companies, and increasingly now Eureka Park, which is where the startups are, is booming. And there's really exciting things going on there. And when you walk up to these spaces, you're not talking to somebody in marketing or communications. You know, you're speaking to the engineer themselves, which is a privilege, really. So we will be ferreting around in there, and I think probably talking to the Kickstarter crew quite a lot. So we'll let you know what we find.
No, that'll be brilliant, because that really is the sort of refuge from press release journalism, isn't it? Talking to the people who have actually started these companies who are really genuinely excited about what they've built. Nelly, what about you?
Today I'm going to probably wander around the show floors. I'm going to go to the baby tech zone and try to find a good baby tech story. There's enormous amounts of tech and events here aimed at parents. I think a lot of the money people spend on consumer gadgets are for their kids and for their babies. And then I'm probably going to go, I don't know, YouTube's going to give a keynote, so I'm going to check that out. It'll be fun.
Good luck getting into that. It's like trying to get into Glastonbury. I've tried before. Samuel, what are you missing this year? You know, you're here in London. You're not at the Consumer Electronics Show. What would you be doing if you were Vegas bound?
Right now, I would be making my way into the exhibition hall for hopefully the last time, and trying to find something in the Chinese Quarter is fantastic. You go into this hall and it's full of the most bizarre things you've ever seen, like rip-offs of all sorts of things, but also just like truly weird. Like my favorite thing from last year was a panda that had a camera in it, and it was designed to kind of like keep a lookout on your home, but it was so unbelievably creepy, no one would ever buy this thing. That's where I'd be right now.
Well, I'm going to go straight onto eBay and try and buy myself a creepy panda from last year's CES. That is it. Big thank you to all of you, Jemima Kish, Nellie Bowles, Jonathan Haynes, and Samuel Gibbs. I've been Ollie Mann. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Ollie with a Y, M-A-N-N. This week's producer was Simon Barnard. You can probably follow him as well, but I shouldn't bother. Thanks for listening. Natalie will be here next week. We'll see you then.
The Guardian has always been a community of readers, journalists, and contributors. And now our live events are bringing these people together.
The Guardian events are The Guardian at its best, which is a two-way conversation involving the reader and having a real, genuine, thriving debate.
Could be anything from food and culture, arts, to politics, to foreign affairs.
To see what events are coming up and to check out the benefits of membership, go to members.theguardian.com. Also, subscribe to the Guardian Live podcast. You can do so on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other reputable audio platforms.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.